Next up is Mr. Tom Talpay from Microsoft, and he talks about SMB3 extensions for low latency.
So, Tom Talpay, Microsoft, been here before, so I know some of you, don't know some of you. I've got a slightly, well, I won't call it off-topic, but forward-looking presentation for you today, all right? I'm going to try to motivate you to go in a direction that I think is extremely, extremely, extremely exciting. And I've talked about this at a couple of different venues that you've probably seen. I talked about it first at SDC, Storage Developers Conference, last September. I talked about it at the NVM Summit in January. That's a SNIA event that was in Santa Clara, or San Jose. I talked about it at the Open Fabrics Developers Conference just last month in Monterey. That's a group of RDMA vendors. And I've been talking this up for some time. So I've been working for the last year or so, maybe a year and a half, not quite 2 years, on a new technology that we at Microsoft call storage class memory. And it's an emerging disruptive class of storage, all right? It's a new technology that's appearing. It's basically non-volatile memory, but we define it more broadly as a non-volatile medium with RAM-like performance. Low latency, high throughput, high capacity, all right? Terabytes of this stuff in a machine. It resides on the memory bus where it's byte addressable. It's not like a storage device that's block addressable, but there is a form factor that makes it block addressable. The interesting thing is not the block addressable version, although that is interesting. It's low latency and incredibly high performance. But the really interesting one is this byte addressability, where the thing sits on a memory bus. And there are new interface paradigms that are rising to utilize this stuff, and many of them are based on time-honored methods like mapped files. So there's a ton of overlap with existing storage, but it has this new API at the bottom that we want to take advantage of. And just to motivate you, because some of you may not have seen this before, I'm just going to draw a quick little picture from my colleague. In 2000-ish, you know, up to 2000, we had hard disk drives, right? They were put into SAN arrays and accelerated using memory, but the basic disk drive had roughly a 5 millisecond latency, 5,000 microseconds. That would be an enterprise drive. In 2010-ish, SSDs became mainstream, and mere mortals could configure very high-performance storage. You could just stick them in your laptop, you could stick them in an array, you could do all kinds of things. SSDs have a native latency around 100 microseconds. All right, that's 50x improvement over the HDD. Today is the beginning of the storage class memory revolution. These things are available today in something called an NVDIMM. They have less than a microsecond of latency local. They're basically memory, hundreds of nanoseconds of latency. Remote, add that latency, that local latency, to the wire time. Definitely less than 10 microseconds. All right? That's another 100x improvement. All right? So 5,000x change over 15 years, right? From hard disk to solid state to storage class memory. 5,000x, you know? How do we take advantage of this thing? It's real. An interesting observation is these two red vertical lines. Always use async, never use async. You can see at the bottom the latency of the hard disk, the latency of the storage of the solid-state disk, the latency of storage class memory, and the latency of DRAM. SSDs and HDDs, we have async block-oriented APIs, right? We prepare a request, we send the request, we wait for the drive to process the request, we get a completion. When we move below about that 100 microsecond range, down into the tens of microsecond range, we start to think about polling and waiting for the device to reply, right? I'll just mention that was where the 50x latency was. But as we get faster and faster devices, we start to look at synchronous APIs, basically load store. We're going to block and wait for the data to become available, right? Definitely, when we're down at DRAM, we never use async, right? Processors don't send a memory fetch request and wait for it to complete and take an interrupt. They just read it, right? Well, there are architectures that do that, sure. But I'm going to argue that it's all about the latency, that if the latency is down below a microsecond, most designs will block, okay? Simple as that. So applications are going to change when they have this type of memory. They're going to use a different API to get to this device. They're not going to use a storage API. They're going to use a load store API. And storage will also do that. So that's the journey I'm going to take you down. The SNIA, the Storage Networking Industry Association, identified the need for a new programming model and has defined one. Basically, it's a memory, it's a mapped file memory thing. The software design is actually quite interesting. A large number of really interesting problems have come out of this exploration. Many of them are on the error cases. That's the really interesting one. Mapped files, this thing called DAX, Direct Access, there's a version of that for many operating systems, and NVML, the non-volatile memory layer. The storage, like I said, will follow this model. So the first thing, probably the most important one to us, is this thing called DAX, Direct Access File System. There's a version for Linux and a version for Windows, and they're actually quite similar. At first, the Windows one was called DAS, D-A-S, and Linux was called DAX, D-A-X, and a lot of people got confused, and it was early, so Windows said, the hell with that, we're just going to call ours DAX, too, because they're very, very similar.
So one possibly naive question. So the statement that once the latency drops under a certain level, all systems will just block waiting for data, doesn't that assume that the processors and the rest of the architecture doesn't accelerate at the same pace as the storage?
True. Processors have pretty much leveled off. The gigahertz rate of a core has not changed much in the past bunch of years. You know how it is in the computer industry, right? We fix one problem, we have another, we make new money solving our new problem, and we just keep going back and forth. We recycle our old ideas, we have all kinds of fun, you know? We'll see where we go. But for the next 5 years, I guarantee you, processors are going to block on this device. Well, anyway, DAX is a file system. In Windows, it actually has two modes. The way you format the device determines the mode. It can be in block mode, which is basically a traditional kind of, basically a RAM disk, and in byte mode, which is a mapped file mode. NVML is a new programming library. It's open sourced. It's included in Linux now, I'm told, in many distros. It's out there on, I forget what the website is, but it has a cute name. And in the future, it'll be included in Windows. We actually have it running in Windows, but we're not ready to ship it as a component right now. Open source, pretty cool. Part of Windows. There are also specialized interfaces, databases, transactional libraries, and even language extensions. Oracle and others are working on these language extensions that you basically decorate the C++ language as transactions built into it. Okay, that's enough motivation. What I want to talk about today is something called push mode. I've talked about this in some detail in the SDC. I'm going to skip over a little bit of it, and I'm just going to jump to the chase. First, I'm going to describe how push mode works and why it's interesting to storage. And then I'm going to talk about how it might be implemented in SMB3 with RDMA extensions. And when we get there, we're going to have a pretty interesting story. So that's what I want to hook you with. So to begin with, just a little background. RDMA is probably the most obvious way to access this storage remotely. I'm skipping over that whole why you need to go remote argument, because I've given it before, and I'm sure I don't have to convince people in this room that remote access to storage is a good thing. But RDMA is the obvious protocol to use to access this stuff. RDMA is a highly optimized, offloaded protocol that allows direct memory access remotely, right? You can read it and write it. It operates over extraordinarily low latency fabrics. It operates at very high data rates. With the proper upper layer, we've delivered, like in Windows, you know, millions, literally millions of 4 kilobyte IOPS with ordinary white boxes. And we can go even higher as we up the class of that hardware and use multi-channel and wait for 100 gigabit RDMA adapters and all these other advancements. We can just keep on riding that curve with RDMA. It gives us the ability to scale our performance. So the way all the RDMA-enabled storage protocols have approached reads and writes is basically identical. They all use the same transfer model that's shown here on the right with two with two diagrams stacked above one another. Basically, the client over here on the left, okay, that's not going to work. The client advertises a memory region. And you can see it way up there in the corner where, I don't even have my on-screen laser pointer, where that little U-shaped arrow says register. And the client effectively selects a buffer, a target buffer, and registers it with the RDMA NIC. And then it sends a request to the server to pull that data to perform a write. Here we are. Thank you. Was it off? Something simple? I didn't see an on-off switch. So it sends a message to the server, and that's an upper-layer message. That would be, in the SMB case, an SMB2 underscore write. And it basically passes this little buffer that it registered as an argument to that thing. The little lightning bolt says that an interrupt occurs on the server registers some memory, and then pulls the data from that buffer when it's ready. Then it performs the write, that's not shown, and then it replies saying, okay, I did or did not write your data. Standard model. All the upper layer protocols do this. SMB does it, NFS RDMA does it, ICER, the iSCSI extension for RDMA does it. There are a couple of protocols that don't do this. Lustre has a push model, but they tend to be rare. Generally speaking, there have been very good reasons for this. It's more secure. This client doesn't access the server's memory directly. It is more scalable in the sense that the server does not pre-allocate memory to the client, right? The client only gets resources when it needs them. And finally, and perhaps surprisingly, it tends to be faster. It can be parallelized, it can be scheduled by the server, and the data can arrive just in time. And that actually greatly improves server performance. It is more overhead on the server. These little lightning bolts are interrupts and work, right? Reads are actually more efficient. Reads have the same registration and the same send, but this is an RDMA write. An RDMA write is basically a very, very lightweight operation. That write is followed by a send to signal to the client that the read data is complete. So there's an interrupt and CPU actually on both sides, but what we're primarily interested in is the stuff over here on the server. So those little things, those little lightning bolts, add latency to this exchange, right? The interrupts themselves add latency, usually a few mics. The work requests, the actual scheduling of threads on the server to perform it. So there's server request processing and server-side RDMA handling that require some CPU. There's the CPU processing time for the request itself, right? The server goes through the file system and all these other things. The I/O stack has to do all that work, buffer management, you know, data copies, all that stuff has to happen on the server. And latencies are undesirable, right? We want to get these things down to the latency of the underlying storage-ish, right? Less than a mic. Can we reduce or remove all of these things when we're operating with a persistent memory backend is the open question. So in schematic mode, I'll call this RDMA push mode. And push mode basically reverses the polarity of the transfer in ways that I just said were maybe, you know, undesirable, right? I said we don't want to pre-allocate things, and we don't want to have the client pushing data to the server, you know, when the client decides, but only when the server decides. But when we have this device on the other end, this persistent memory device, there's no I/O stack, there's no processing actually required. The RDMA device can perform almost everything with some important extensions that I'm about to get into. But the model is basically simple. The client sends a request to the server to register a chunk of destination memory. And the server performs that registration and gives the handle back to the client. The client then proceeds to either push this first box or pull data, depending on what he's permitted to do, from that memory directly. And he can continue to do that without any interaction whatsoever from the server. Just as the server could move data back to the client, in this case, the client will pull data from the server. And then eventually, when the client is done, he'll give it up and allow the server to unregister and send. These tend to be very long-lived registrations. Yes? It's you could think of it as a remote mmap. There's quite a bit going on up here that basically determines what blocks belong to the file and registers them in a contiguous, in a virtually contiguous way. Yes. And then the client will proceed to write what it thinks is a contiguous region, which will actually be scattered by the RDMA protocol into the pages that belong to the file. I'll have a little more detail on it. Roughly, it's a remote mmap. I'm sorry, did I hear another question? Oh, okay. There are a couple of other things that might happen here and there. The client may periodically have to update the server, right? If you're dirtying blocks, you might want to update the last change time, things like that. So metadata operations may be interspersed. Those are tend to be higher layer things. You don't have the client directly writing the control blocks, just the data blocks. And every once in a while, the server may need to call back to the client, right? If the server needs to recall, revoke, or manage resources, maybe the file was rearranged. Maybe the server needs its resources back. It can break those. So push mode implications. I mentioned this previously. Historically, RDMA storage protocols avoided this for good reasons: non-exposure of server memory, resource conservation, performance. But today, server memory can be well protected with very little performance compromise. That was actually not true of RDMA protocols maybe 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago. Better, more highly performant memory registration techniques are in place now. Better protection within the server, within the NIC, is now available. Much finer grained. And the bottom line is people actually know how to do this now. More people in the industry know how to program to the RDMA interface now. So those exposure concerns are less of a worry. Resources are also more scalable. NICs have gotten a lot better. They can handle many more queue pairs. They can handle much more memory. There is still a congestion issue, and I'm going to talk about that. But we do have mitigations for that with respect to hardware QoS, hardware flow control. Now, I just want to mention one little pickle about the platform, why we can't, well, actually, I'm going to go through a couple little pickles, why we can't do this immediately. And the first and possibly most interesting is the problem of the platform. And Intel developed these slides, and I'm swiping their diagrams for this with permission. But the first one shows kind of a general picture. This big thing right here is a general architectural diagram of a modern Intel motherboard, or CPU, PCI, DIMM complex, at least, that sort of core portion of the motherboard. A couple of interesting things here. The first is that we have a PCI device here, the RNIC, the RDMA NIC, which connects to the PCI root port. The root port talks to something called the IIO, the integrated IO controller. The integrated IO controller talks to two things. It talks to this thing called the LLC, which is Intel for the last level cache, and up here the IMC, the integrated memory controller. And up at the very top, you'll notice this dotted line called the ADR domain. ADR stands for asynchronous DRAM refresh. Modern Intel server motherboards have, many of them have ADR. Basically, a super cap or a special power supply maintains power to this domain in these devices, in these designs, and is able to signal the CPU when that power is gone, as well as power a flush, basically an emergency save when that occurs. ADR has a couple of gotchas. The biggest one is the ordering problem. When the power goes down, you have no idea what order these things are written. So if an error occurs, all heck can break loose inside the ADR domain. And also, not all of the ADR domain, not all the places where the data can land is in the ADR domain. On Haswell processors, for instance, the RNIC will perform something called an allocating write transaction, which can cache the data both in the IIO or the LLC, which is not yet into the ADR domain. And there's no way for the NIC to flush those things, although it can decorate its writes in certain interesting ways. And the two ways that Intel suggested as workarounds, they call these software workarounds, they can perform non-allocating write transactions in which they decorate PCI writes to basically pass through the IAIO in a write-through mode. Or second, they can perform allocating write transactions, but then signal a CPU to flush the LLC to the IMC, right? And both of these modes can be used, but you'll notice that they either bypass an important hardware facility by turning off its caches, or they interrupt the CPU. So in both cases, they add undesirable overhead. We'd like not to have to do that. So what I've been working on is an RDMA protocol extension to make this more efficient. The goal is we need a remote guarantee of durability. The client wants to be able to write to data and guarantee that it's durable, right? This is sort of like a write-through SMB write call, where you've performed the write. When the write completes, you know that it's safe on the medium, whatever it is. RDMA doesn't currently provide that. An RDMA write, you might think, delivered the data to the memory. No, the RDMA write delivered the data to one of these places, right? Either the IIO, the LLC, you know, all that kind of thing, short of where you actually want it to be. And it's even worse than that, because the completion at the sender doesn't mean the data even left the NIC. It just means that the packet, with the buffer that the packet is carrying, can be reused, basically. It's a very weak guarantee. Some RNICs give slightly stronger guarantees, but it never, ever, ever means the data actually reached anything. At the receiver, processing means only that the data was accepted, not that it was sent on the PCI bus, not that it was reordered or anything. This is basically just the same behavior you get from a PCI write. It's fire and forget. This thing is sent, and someday it'll make it there. You know, someday you'll get an error if it didn't make it there. But you don't get a synchronous behavior. You don't get any guarantee from the completion of the write. The other problem is that there's no actual commit operation. There's no PCI protocol to perform this commit, right? We had to look at all these weird little workarounds. So every once in a while, with those workarounds, we can make platform-specific guarantees, but the client doesn't really know those guarantees are there. The RDMA protocol is not in the business of negotiating, you know, detailed platform restrictions, not even the upper layer, right? That's purely off the table. So what we want is an abstract way for a remote device to push data to a durability domain and guarantee that it made it there. We'd really like to know that it made it there intact and in order, or at least in a predictable order. So I proposed a RDMA protocol extension, and there were two obvious possibilities. One was to simply put a push bit on the write. And it turns out that there are some, it sounds like such a good idea, but it's really, really hard to implement. And a lot of reasons point against it. It significantly changes the write semantic. Remember what I said, PCI write is fire and forget? Well, you put a push bit on it, it's a blocking operation now, right? You have to wait until it pushes before you can complete it. So it needs a write ACK. Well, there's no write ACK in the RDMA protocol. There might be a transport ACK that the packet was received, but there's no actual write ACK. So we'd have to extend the protocol in addition to creating a blocking operation out of an operation that was a streaming operation before. So we look at this as very undesirable. It would be a wholesale re-architecture of both the implementation and the protocol, I argue. On the other hand, we could say, why don't we just have a commit? All our new APIs have a commit. It's called optimized flush from SNIA. Why don't we put commit on the wire, basically? Taking your hand back, Volker, or Jeremy, sure.
So I'm wondering, so that if you're doing this just at the SMB layer, couldn't you essentially have the client do an SMB flush?
Oh yeah, I'll get there. Oh, okay. I'll talk about the three models that we can use here. But each one has its own latency penalty, and I want to take that penalty as far down as I can over time. Simo. With RDMA, right, true.
Right. But how do you, isn't it still again a protocol re-architecture already? You want commit to give you that kind of guarantee. Then you have to, anyway, guarantee
that. Yeah, well, okay, I'll take a minute to describe the type of operation. I think I talk about this in a slide in a minute. RDMA has operations, they have a write operation, they also have a read and an atomic operation. Those operations flow on the same connection the operations are ordered with respect to other operations. RDMA writes are not ordered with relation to one another, but they are ordered with in relation to an RDMA read, or more accurately, the RDMA read is ordered with respect to them, so they don't pass it. And the commit behaves very much like an RDMA read. I think I actually say that right here. It sends a message to the remote NIC. The remote NIC makes sure that everything that arrived prior to that operation is pushed onto the bus. It may not have made it anywhere, but at least it's, you know, in front of this read. Then it's the logical read. It doesn't actually perform a read. Might, but doesn't have to. But this, so then it performs the commit on the named bytes, basically. It's a list of regions that are guaranteed to become durable and replies to that. Now, if you continued to write while that commit was executing, all kinds of unpredictable things will happen. So there are still upper layer concerns about ordering. It's just like you're doing writes to a file system. You know, if you've called fsync and you're continuing to write while fsync occurred, you have no idea whether those later writes were synced or not, right? They may or may not have gotten in front of the sync. Same thing on this. In fact, that's not an accident. You know, these protocols are architected that way because they rhyme with the other behaviors in the system. Volker. Well, we're talking RAM with this very complicated caching interconnect, a PCI bus, an IIO, a DDIO, blah, blah, blah. Memory barriers are relative to the CPU. There is no memory barrier relative to the PCI bus. That's a big problem. If there were a PCI message that gave you that barrier, that'd be cool. We could use it, yes. That's one of the extensions that we need. I basically have been talking about this, right? It's a new wire operation. It's implementable in all the RDMA protocols. I've actually had this discussion with all the RDMA protocol designers, and they all think this is great. In fact, a lot of other people think it's great too, which is good. The initiating RNIC provides a region list and other commit parameters. The parameters is still a little bit TBD, but the idea is that it's a set, it's sort of like an IOVEC, right? It's an offset and a length, and a list of those things. The receiving RNIC cues the operation to proceed in order, right? It makes sure that any prior RDMA write has been received, no holes in the sequence stream, for instance, and that all the buffers have been actually pushed to the PCI bus. It behaves just like a read or an atomic, so it's basically a new operation on that same queue internal to the thing. It's subject to flow control and ordering, so only a limited number of these things are being processed by the NIC at once, and only one of them is actually being processed at the head of the queue. So it pushes the pending writes. It can simply opt to push everything. It can be a dumb NIC that doesn't track its writes. It just says, everything that's dirty, you know, I'm gonna push it. That might be very expensive. If I have 6 terabytes of main memory and I'm only trying to flush one cache line, that might be heavy overkill. I might need a better NIC someday, but that's okay. You know, today I'll go for it if I have it today. So it performs some magical persistent memory commit that we're going to have to figure it out. Today, it probably just interrupts the CPU and says, please, will you make sure all the caches are flushed? Please, will you call this god-awful instruction called pcommit? And, you know, something will happen. But future, we want it to happen directly from the NIC. And the NIC only responds to the initiator when durability is assured. That's what's important. The initiator gets a signal back. So when I call commit, I can block and I can wait, or I can run it asynchronously, it doesn't matter, but I get some signal that says my commit is done and I'm good to proceed. There's a few other things that we want to piggyback on this. The most interesting one is the atomically placed data after commit, which is my little shorthand for what if I wrote a log record, let's say it's 3K bytes, and I need that to go into durable memory. And then after it's durable, I want to update the pointer to point to this new log record. Right? So I basically have two operations. I have 3K of durable data, and then I have a pointer of durable data. Why don't I just put them both in the same request? So this could be an interesting way to decorate it or to strongly order a commit with another commit. Immediate data, you may occasionally want to signal the upper layer that this thing has occurred. There might be sort of an in-band way. Immediate data is code for an RDMA facility. You might want to send even more than the immediate data, which is usually just like 64 bits, a whole message. You may want to perform an integrity check, right? If I didn't signal the CPU, but I want to make sure the data is good, is there some way for the NIC to tell me the data landed the way I expected, to read it back without having to send it back over the network? The decisions for these other semantics are going to be heavily workload dependent. I think the small log write scenario is going to be a real obvious one. You know, I think a lot of people are going to want that. Some of the others, I don't know. I think we have to have this dialogue up and down the stack, and I think SMB will give some opinions. I certainly have some opinions. There's also this platform-specific extension that the RDMA protocol would invoke. This is the PCI extension to support commit. The idea is to avoid CPU interaction, right? To avoid interrupting that CPU and using extra resources. The latency, the expectation, if we can perform this RDMA extension, is that we'll have single-digit microsecond remote write and commit, right? 2, 5-ish. Basically, the transit time of the network, right? We have to send a packet and receive a packet, maybe more than one. Then the time for the commit. And, you know, 2 to 5, something like that, is an order of magnitude over what we have today. SMB, NFS, RDMA, and ICER all have write latencies with flush in the 30 to 50 microsecond range when you send them to like a RAM disk. So 30 to 50, 3 to 5, 2 to 5, 10x. I like 10x, right? And that's where we go today. As wires get faster, as buses get more efficient, we can start chiseling mics off that, we hope. Remote read is also possible. You don't have to just use this for write. You can also read. With read, you have no commit, right? You just read. There's never a server interrupt. There's only a single client interrupt, and you can batch it. That's one of the beauties of commit. If you have a write, a decorated write, you can't batch it, right? You have to push every write as durable or else. So it's going to be a more expensive operation. Whereas if I was sending a large amount of data and I wanted to commit at once, I could go write, commit, right? And then I only have one commit on the thing. And we can also play our tricks with deep parallelism, multi-channel, flow control, etc. Trust me, this thing will sing. Really sing. All right. I'm going to jump up the stack to SMB, what we all know and love. I'm going to preface my comment with the statement, this is only one possible approach. All right, I am not specifying a protocol here. I'm not trying to glue this to an operating system. In fact, I believe you can implement exactly everything I'm going to say on both Linux and Windows today. Both of them will have DAX-enabled file systems. Both of them will support NVDIMM. All of them support RDMA. We'll have to extend RDMA to gain the full advantage. But we can do this on many systems today, honest. I'll show you the two ways we can take advantage of it. It's my hope that Samba, all SMB3 and SMB Direct-enabled implementations can adopt this as they appear. And just as one little proof about this, these are the presentations about DAX that happened at the NVM Summit back in January. And the really cool thing was Neil Christensen and Jeff Moyer went back to back. I think Neil went first and Jeff went second. And after they both presented, everybody in the audience said they could have given each other's presentations. It was the most astonishing thing. They were talking about the same architectural approach, the same basic underlying problems. You know, the way they use the buffer cache, the way the memory map files worked. They rhymed across the board. It was just really interesting. So remember that that's a portable idea. So I just recopied these little pictures. There's nothing different about this to just remind you. In a traditional mode, let's say we had SMB3 today and we have an RDMA adapter, but you know, we don't have any of the commit facility. We're just going to do this by sending messages to the server. We're basically going to do it exactly the way we do it today. We're going to do a write. It could be buffered or write through, but the server is going to perform the transfer to the DAX device. If it's RDMA, the server will probably RDMA directly into the memory, right? If it's not RDMA, he'll probably do some sort of data copy, RAM disk style. Flush the file with SMB2 flush. Basically, flush will say, am I flushing to a DAX-enabled volume? If it is, it doesn't have to sort of scurry the interrupt the IO request blocks down the stack. All it has to do is call this commit to tell the memory itself. So it'll have sort of a special version of flush. And we've already got an operation for that, so it'll just perform a commit. It will handle possible recalls. It'll close the file when it's done. It's basically what we do for unbuffered IO in SMB today, right? It's traditional API. It's fully functional. It just works. The disadvantages is the higher latency from all these round trips and these little things, they all add time, right? Latency is time. So higher CPU means higher time. All right, so that's how we do it today. And in fact, that's what we benchmark when we talk about SCM benchmarks today. We're using this model, simple as that. There is a little detail that I'll tell you in the fun facts just before we wrap up. So the basic steps for real push mode. Okay, now let's say we have the RDMA extension, right? This was traditional mode, and this is push mode once we have this this new protocol extension. So we're going to, up here, open a DAX-enabled file. We're going to obtain a lease. I'll talk about why we want to do that. We're going to request a push mode registration. We're going to do pretty much all of that in this send. There might be more than one message here, but we could actually decorate a single create to do all those things in just one exchange. Once we have a push mode registration, we can party on pushing and pulling, okay? And we can commit this little line right here with the two diamonds is the magical new commit that would follow writes. No commit needed on the read. When we're done, we'll release the registration, we'll drop the lease, we'll close the handle. And I just want to drill down on what exactly we're going to do. I got about four slides for that, and then four slides of fun facts. Okay, opening the file performs the usual processing, right? We perform the authorization, we handle the setup of the handle, all that stuff. Probably, this is my guess, we're going to decorate the create with a create context that says, I am a persistent memory aware client, and I would like to access this file in direct access mode. That create context will tell the server to do this if it's possible. If it's not possible, the server just will simply do a regular open. And that's when you return to traditional mode for your API. So you also have to request a lease. The reason you want a lease is that you're going to establish a mapped file read-write interface. You're going to register the actual pages, right? You need to own those pages. You need to make sure they don't move. You need to make sure that the server doesn't need them back. For lots of reasons, you want to make sure you have protection. But if that occurs, then the create context comes back with the lease and the push mode acknowledgement, right? So it's important that both those steps occur. Once that happens, there's a few gotchas to this mapped file. The mapped file API, all you can do is read it and write it, right? You can't truncate it, you can't add blocks, you can't punch holes, you can't do lots of things. So you may have to continue, the client may have to continue to send a bunch of SMB3 operations. But once again, we know about all those. Clients are using those today. Applications are well familiar with them. We can support any local API that we want. But there's nothing unusual except for that mapping step, right? That one little magic registration up here that occurred. So the registration. You need to register the file regions for RDMA write or read from the client. So I view this as a new FS control. It may be done in the create call, but clients probably don't want to map the entire file all the time. So I believe an FS control, much like a lock or any sort of region-based operation, will be a more natural way to do it. And the client can obviously request the whole file, but he may request just portions of the file. He may also want to register some of them for read, some of them for write. You know, he may have all kinds of things. No matter what, the server will have to pin the mapping, make sure the file doesn't move in the memory. It RDMA register the pages, and then return that handle. Okay, maybe a list of handles, depends on the limitations of the RDMA hardware. So the client can and will request multiple regions. Once he has those handles, he can party on. Those red arrows are his. At this point, the client will perform writes and reads directly to and from the pages of the file. Right? He's going absolutely directly to the medium. He's going right to the DIM. He's doing that with the RDMA adapter, and he doesn't need the CPU at all. If we have the RDMA commit extension, he's actually committing to this device via an RDMA operation. He doesn't have to invoke the CPU, doesn't have to use the SMB3 protocol. He's basically tunneling under SMB with the RDMA protocol. He may periodically update the file metadata, like timestamps, right? We know how to do that, right? SMB clients do that. But, you know, like I said before, push mode cannot add blocks, append the file, punch holes, whatever. You have to return to SMB3. So you're going to be doing a mix of SMB and RDMA on this thing. recall, if the server needs to manage sharing and registration, like, you know, let's say it's a sharing violation, that's a typical thing. But a mapping change, right? If DAX has to rearrange the volume, or if a new device comes online and things, you know, the hardware changed. The registration changed, maybe you ran out of RDMA resources and you need to take some back, the client can go back to traditional mode. All these things would be sent as basically a lease recall, or a decorated lease recall. And the client will perform the usual. He still owns the lease when the recall arrives, so he can flush all his dirty buffers, you know, dirty buffers way back at the client. When he's done, you know, getting it ready, he returns the lease, and he can ask for it again if he needs it later to recover. If he can't, well, he still has that connection. He can just do regular old SMB. I'll show you the picture, and it's just the next slide, but the fun fact will show that in a little more detail. And done, well, done's pretty straightforward. You just close the handle, right? Return the lease. By returning the lease, which you could do manually, it'll clear the push mode registration. It could be an explicit FS control here, but I don't know. We'll see. I think if you create regions, I think you should be able to destroy them individually. And I just note that the registration will be reset during handle recovery. If you lose the connection, you know, you've lost your registration. When you recover the handle, when you recover the lease, you have to then recover this registration. So fun fact, I gotta go quick because I'm down to 5 minutes. All push mode handles are in buffered mode. This is really interesting. Normally, you think, well, the best way to, the most efficient and most consistent way to do remote I/O is unbuffered, right? Because it'll go straight to the volume, right? But in fact, you want it buffered, and for a very interesting reason. The way DAX works, here's the DAX file system. You have regular SMB3 into the server, and regular I/O requests flow down to it. And this PMEM acts kind of like a RAM disk, right? So this is a block device and a block file system that's emulated on top of this RAM disk. But at the same time, that device has a so-called buffer cache. Well, in both Linux and Windows, that buffer cache is directly mapped to the PMEM, right? So if you open it in buffer mode, this is where you want to go. And when you have a buffer cache, you can load store from the server, and you can read-write from the NIC, right? And so you literally go into this mapping, and that mapping writes to the PMEM for you. And so basically, the server will turn off any request for unbuffered on a DAX volume. It just simply says, well, the client asked for it unbuffered, but trust me, I'm just going to give it to him buffered. He'll never know the difference. In fact, I'll give him better service if I do that. Because if I gave him unbuffered, I'd have to generate all these I/O requests and send them down the stack because I don't have any mapping up here, right? So that's fun fact number one. Fun fact number two, we need new plumbing in the server to do this right. The registration recall can come from the file system. It can come from the RDMA adapter. It can come from anything else within the server. The lease recall is going to be the mechanism. So these up calls that happen internal to the server are going to be originating from the file system and not from the file system. So there's going to be some new plumbing that the server developer needs to think about. Fun fact number three, fan in. Let's say we have 1,000 clients all using this array on the server. Intel's 3D Crosspoint, they're talking about in the very first generation, 6 terabytes on a single motherboard. Right, 6 terabytes. So we're probably going to have a bunch of clients using this thing, right? So if they all start pushing writes to this guy and it's all happening at the RDMA layer, they can congest the interface, the network itself. They can also congest the PMEM. It only can do so many commits per second. And once it gets hot, it probably can do fewer than that. Most of these devices don't have much wear, by the way, but they do have this sort of throttling behavior. So SMB3 provides this with credits. The problem is we're not sending SMB3 requests. So I got to think about that one a little bit. But we have storage QoS and credit behavior in the clients today. So we have the tools to control this today. How we wire them in, we still have to think about. And fun fact number four, SMB3 has quite a bit of integrity and privacy in it, right? We have signing of packets, we have authenticated encryption, which provides for both integrity and privacy. When we move all these transfers to RDMA, we've gone under that layer, right? And we don't have it, right? So we have probably some new questions to ask ourselves. Who's in charge of integrity? Who protects against men in the middle? How do we handle encryption, right? If these devices have encryption, or do we need to push encrypted data to them exclusively? A lot of different options here. good bit of thinking to be done. I have actually proposed some extensions to the RDMA protocol to provide this, both encryption and integrity checking. I won't drill down on them, but I'm out of time anyway, but be happy to talk about it. And this is one of the ways we're talking about it. My colleague Jim Pinkerton and I have co-authored this document called RDMA Durable Write Commit. It's been published in the ITF since late February. I was promising to update it in April, but I didn't make that, so I'm going to promise to update it in May. It's where we're trying to have this discussion. The ITF is sort of like a big open source protocol effort, right? It is, anybody can join it, anybody can participate in it. It's a wonderful way to have a protocol dialogue, and I'm having it here. There are other standards groups who are very interested. The IBTA is working on this in Rocky, the SNEA, Non-Volatile Memory, TWIG, and Open Fabrics has these other groups. DSDA is the most interesting one, which are talking about this as well. So if you're interested, read that document and give me comments, me and Jim. And here's a couple of pointers to some of the other talks I've given. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Any questions on that?
Simo.
Is there the need for any error reporting or finding out if something happened at the commit time?
Yes, the commit does respond with an error. In fact, I'm getting a little bit of pushback on that one. Normally, an RDMA operation either succeeds or fails. When it fails, it closes the connection. Its goal is to be this reliable transport, and the only thing a reliable transport can do is deliver or die, right? Commit is different. The data is there. You know the data is there because all the operations that push the data there completed, but the commit failed. So I propose the commit returns a status. I don't know exactly how the client recovers if the status is bad, but there's no reason to close the connection. In fact, that would be probably the most unfriendly thing to do, right? So I propose that it return a status. That is basically the same thing the SNEA NVM programming TWIG API does. Optimized Flush has a version called Optimized Flush and Verify. And verify doesn't mean verify the data, it means verify that the operation completed, and it returns a status, in effect. And then, oh, there are many possible error conditions. It's memory, so parity error, that kind of thing, any sort of corruption. Some devices will fail to program when they get hot. Literally, they use heat to enable their medium. It's just like a disk. Think of it like a disk. You know, how many things can go wrong when you write to a disk, right? On a sunny day with the wind at your back, everything's great, but not all days are like that.
But isn't there only way for the client to just rewrite everything and recommit?
He could, and in fact, that's a common error recovery. One of the most interesting things, if you read the SNEA background, is that when you get an error, you actually don't know what's wrong. Right, because you were writing to a cache line, it may have written a whole page, and God knows where the other errors are. We call it the blast radius. We know there's a problem here, but boom, you know, it took out data to left and right of the error. And determining the blast radius and then determining what the error recovery needs to be is very difficult. It turns out to be an application problem, not a hardware problem. Some of your colleagues are actually participating in this thing in very interesting ways, as well as lots of other renders. So you should join the SNEA discussion if you have opinions about it, because it's really subtle. It's the most subtle thing I've ever done in recent years.